Welcome. My name is Hugo Vargas. I am professor of medicine at the Mayo Clinic in Arizona, and I'm the medical director of the Office of Clinical Research in my institution. This is an IAS USA module on initial treatment of hepatitis C viral genotype 1 in 2016. For this conference, I want to cover the following points. I want to discuss who and when to treat. I want to review the specifics of treatment for viral genotype 1A, both in non-cirrhotic and compensated cirrhotic patients, and then following that, viral genotype 1B, treatment for non-cirrhotic and compensated patients. For each type of patient, I will present recommended regimens and alternatives. Additionally, we will cover cautions and controversies that have arisen as a result of the introduction of these new regimens. Before discussing the specific regimens for treatment, we ought to understand the burden of disease as well as who constitutes an ideal candidate for treatment at this time point. As you will see in the next slide, the worldwide burden of disease due to hepatitis C virus is increasing. The World Health Organization estimates that 130 to 170 million people, that is 3% of the world's population, is currently infected with hepatitis C and at risk of developing cirrhosis and or hepatocellular carcinoma. Each year, we see anywhere from 3 to 4 million new infections detected. Hepatitis C is responsible for 50 to 75% of all hepatocellular carcinomas and 50% of all liver transplantations in the developed world. Hepatitis C-associated cirrhosis will lead to liver failure and death in approximately 20 to 25% of cirrhotic patients. The next graphic will help me to explain several points. First, please note the distribution of hepatitis C infection throughout the world. The size of each circle represents the magnitude in numbers of millions of people that are infected with disease. The color codes represent the different types of viral genotypes present in the specific regions. Note that the United States and North America have a significant amount of viral burden, yet it is quite smaller compared to North Africa, the sub-Saharan continent, and India and the Far East. Please note the viral genotype that may have been acquired by individuals that acquired the disease in those specific areas is important to understand and remember as treatment is genotype dependent at this time point. The next slide represents a very important concept, and that is the linkage of screening to care. Unfortunately, in our country, despite significant efforts at many fronts, the understanding of the prevalence of the disease has not led to a great impact on the detection of new cases, and better yet, the referral of those patients who have been confirmed to have disease, staged for the severity of disease, to go on to be treated and eventually cured from their infection. As you can see that, for the 3.2 million people that we know are infected, in the year 2013, only approximately 200,000 people had been successfully treated. It is very important to remember that our success today with very highly active agents is dependent on the amount of detection and referral for treatment that we can achieve. So who should be treated? Overriding principles and recommendations are as follows. First and foremost, hepatitis C infection today is a curable disease. Thus, all hepatitis C infected patients should be considered for initiation of therapy. There are obviously certain groups that will benefit the most from immediate therapy, and those include patients with cirrhosis, recipients of liver transplantations who remain hepatitis C infected, patients who, while infected with hepatitis C, are also infected with HIV, as these patients have much more rapid progression of hepatitis C than those who are mono-infected with C, and patients with extrahepatic manifestations of hepatitis C, such as cryoglobulinemia, B-cell lymphoma, porphyria cutanea tarda, among others. Special consideration should also be given to treating hepatitis C in segments of the population where by decreasing infection, one stops the infection of other members of the society. This includes prison inmates, patients who are HIV positive and who are having unprotected sex with other men, clinicians at high risk of transmitting their disease to their patients, such as surgeons and surgical technicians, and most importantly, IV drug users in whom sharing of the paraphernalia required to continue their habit may lead to more infection. With that being said, there are patients who should not receive therapy, especially those who have life-threatening illnesses where treatment is not likely to impact their immediate survival and who have survivals that are less than 12 months. Let us now focus on the specific regimens now available for patients before we construct the recommendations for each individual group. First regimen that I want to review is ledipasvir and sofosbuvir. Ledipasvir is an NS5A complex inhibitor. Sofosbuvir is an NS5B nucleoside inhibitor. This regimen, which is available as a fixed-dose combination single pill of 90 milligrams of ledipasvir, 400 milligrams of sofosbuvir, was approved in the United States in 2014 for treatment of patients infected with viral genotype 1 for hepatitis C. We will review the pivotal registration trials for this approval, and they include ION studies 1 and 3. Special considerations the clinician needs to have when considering the use of this medication are as follows. Sofosbuvir is to be avoided in patients with GFRs that are less than 30 milligrams per deciliter until there's further instructions as to how to dose this regimen in that population. Co-administration with amiodarone can cause life-threatening bradycardias, and thus this combination should be avoided in patients who need to take amiodarone. This regimen has excellent profile in patients with compensated cirrhosis, and it is very important to encourage patients to avoid the use of proton pump inhibitors while receiving the therapy, as ledipasvir absorption can be decreased by that class of drugs. I mentioned the registration trials that led to the approval of this regimen included studies ION-1, ION-2, and ION-3. For this segment, we will focus on ION-1 and ION-3. In the next slide is the basic outline of the study plan for the ION-1. This study looked at patients with viral genotype 1 disease who were treatment naive in Europe and the United States. It looked at 865 patients randomized to one of the four arms of the study in equal proportions. The patients for the study purposes were stratified according to viral genotype, subtype, and cirrhosis. Notice that patients received ledipasvir and sofosbuvir for either 12 or 24 weeks, and half the patients in each group received ribavirin concurrently. The next slide illustrates the high-level results for the study. As you can see here, 12 weeks or 24 weeks, regardless of ribavirin use, led to very high levels of viral clearance in this patient population. ION-3, a study that further studied how to treat patients with this regimen, looked at the administration of ledipasvir and sofosbuvir with and without ribavirin for a full 8 weeks, and then compare that to the administration of ledipasvir and sofosbuvir for 12 weeks. This study enrolled 647 patients who were treatment naive and did not include any cirrhotic patients. The distribution across the three arms was of equal proportions, and patients were studied based on viral subtypes 1A or 1B. The results, as illustrated in the slide, show that there's no difference in the sustained virological response at 12 weeks for any of the three arms. Recommendations for treatment, thus, for viral genotype 1 patients who are naive to therapy are based on these findings. Sofosbuvir and ledipasvir is effective across genotype 1 patients who are treatment naive for 12 weeks. Patients who have low viral titers, less than 6 million international units, were studied in a post-hoc analysis, and their treatment was felt to be adequate for 8 weeks without ribavirin. Generally, one sees very minimal, if any, breakthrough, and relapse is rare. Let us now focus on the combination of cimeprevir and sofosbuvir. Cimeprevir and sofosbuvir were approved separately for overlapping indications. Cimeprevir is a second-wave, first-generation NS3/4A protease inhibitor. Sofosbuvir, as we mentioned before, is a nucleotide polymerase inhibitor. The combination was tested as proof-of-concept interferon-free regimen for genotype 1 patients in the Phase 2 COSMOS study. In addition to the results of this study, treatment outside of clinical trials has been already reported and published and forms the basis for our recommendation. The next slide illustrates the pooled arm overview of the results of the COSMOS study. As you can see here, as patients are separated by the degree of fibrosis, response rates are in the 90 to 94% for patients regardless of their fibrosis level, and irrespective of ribavirin use, the response is quite excellent. The FDA thus approved the combination of cimeprevir and sofosbuvir in November 2014 based on these results. Ribavirin was not felt to improve the SVR12 rate, yet the FDA allows the 12-week use in non-cirrhotics and recommends 24-week treatment in patients with cirrhosis, whether they are naive or treatment experienced. Phase 3 studies that further evaluated the use of this regimen have recently been published. In the next slide, we see the results of the Optimist 1 study, which was cimeprevir and sofosbuvir being used in genotype 1 non-cirrhotics. For this conference, we will focus on the patients who are treatment naive. As you can see, 12 weeks of cimeprevir and sofosbuvir gave us more than 95% response in patients who are treatment naive with genotype 1. When one looks at the Q80K mutation that renders the virus more resistant to therapy with cimeprevir, it did not seem to have an impact on the long-term response of this regimen, regardless of the viral genotype. In the next slide, the Optimist 2 study looking at patients with cirrhosis using cimeprevir and sofosbuvir, again focusing on treatment-naive patients, the response rate was 88% for 12 weeks of therapy. The implication of this results is that patients who have cirrhosis should not be treated for only 12 weeks with this regimen. As I have already mentioned, data from real-life environments where people are being treated with cimeprevir and sofosbuvir has already been reported and published. The results of the HCV target group, represented here in the slide, show that overall response rates with cimeprevir and sofosbuvir were quite similar to what people were seeing in clinical trials. These results come from clinical practices that did not have very restrictive inclusion criteria for treatment. We can see here that those patients, even those difficult to treat, responded quite well with and without ribavirin. Groups that needs to be considered are cirrhotic patients, patients with genotype 1A, and treatment-experienced patients. As you can see here, the vast majority of them respond at rates greater than 85%. Thus, for cimeprevir and sofosbuvir, we need to have the following considerations. If one is to consider treating a genotype 1A patient, particularly if they have cirrhosis or if one is considering retreatment, the presence of Q80K polymorphism should be considered. There is no dose adjustment of cimeprevir required for patients with mild, moderate, or severe renal impairment. As far as drug-drug interactions, all regimens that include protease inhibitors need to take into consideration the potential for the induction or inhibition of CYP3A cytochrome mechanism, as it will impact the plasma concentrations of cimeprevir significantly. As with any regimen that contains sofosbuvir, the co-administration with amiodarone is very important to exclude to ensure that life-threatening bradycardias do not occur. Let us now focus our attention on the combination of elbasvir and grazoprevir. Grazoprevir is a second-generation NS3/4A protease inhibitor. Elbasvir is a second-generation NS5A complex inhibitor. As with all protease inhibitors, drug-drug interactions should be closely scrutinized and package inserts should be closely followed. The use of this regimen should be considered in genotype 1A patients after reviewing for the presence of NS5A-specific resistance-associated variants, or RAVs. As it pertains to RAV testing, it is important for the clinician to know that detecting mutations at the population level, that is, situations where 10 to 20% of the quasi-species that have mutations are detected, is felt to be adequate at this time. RAV testing in genotypes other than 1 are not widely available at this point. NS5A mutations that are impactful to elbasvir are listed in this slide. When ordering this test, the clinical labs usually will report the specific mutations that are present and that will render the elbasvir agent in this regimen not effective. The high-level results of the phase 3 study that was pivotal in the approval of this combination is seen in the next slide. The so-called CEDGE study, published in the Annals of Internal Medicine in 2014, is seen here. Overall treatment of patients for 12 weeks, it seemed to be 95% at 12 weeks after discontinuation of therapy. As you can see, patients with viral genotype 1A and 1B respond very well in this regimen, and the presence of cirrhosis did not seem to impact the overall outcome. The majority of failures were due to relapse, and as I mentioned before, evaluating the viral populations for resistance-associated variants is very important in managing the success of this regimen. The next slide illustrates the results when it comes to patients with cirrhosis. At the top of the slide, we see the results of this regimen with and without ribavirin for 12 weeks in patients with compensated liver disease As you can see here, the regimen without ribavirin is effective in 98% of patients. Let us now discuss the regimen consisting of paratapravir, ombitasvir, dasabuvir with and without ribavirin, the so-called 3D regimen. Paratapravir is a ritonavir-boosted NS3/4A protease inhibitor. Ombitasvir is an NS5A complex blocker. This combination is presented as a single pill accompanied by dasabuvir, which is a non-nucleoside inhibitor administered twice daily. And of course, ribavirin is also administered separately in genotype 1A patients, but not necessarily in patients with genotype 1B. As with ladipasvir, sofosbuvir, there were several pivotal trials that led to registration of this regimen. For this particular group, we are going to consider the Sapphire 1 and the Turquoise 2 regimens. Sapphire 1 was a placebo-controlled designed study looking at patients who were treatment naive, a total of 631, and they were treated in the following way. Patients received the 3D regimen plus ribavirin, and a small group of placebo patients were rolled over then to receive the regimen after 12 weeks of treatment with placebo, so that everybody received the regimen and that 12 weeks SVR could be analyzed for the whole patient population. Ribavirin was dosed at a dose of 1,000 to 200 milligrams daily according to body weight. This next slide illustrates the results of the Sapphire 1 study, which were measured against historical rates of response. And as you can see here, the regimen was not only non-inferior, but superior to historical controls. Overall response rate was 96%. And as you can see here, 98% for viral genotype 1B and 95% for viral genotype 1A. The next slide illustrates how this regimen looks in subgroups of patients. Particularly, we should pay attention to subgroups that were considered difficult to treat in the past, as patients with African-American ancestries, patients with high BMI, and patients with higher fibrosis. As you can see here, not even viral titers impacted the efficacy of this regimen overall. In the next slide, we see the results of the Turquoise 2 study, in which 380 genotype 1 infected cirrhotic patients were reviewed with this regimen. Patients received either 12 weeks of the 3D regimen with ribavirin or 24 weeks. As you see here, for patients with genotype 1A who had cirrhosis, the results were better with 24 weeks of duration of therapy, whereas for genotype 1B, the duration of therapy did not seem to make any difference. As opposed to studies with earlier stages of disease, all patients in the Turquoise 2 study, if you remember, received ribavirin. Given that patients with genotype 1A and cirrhosis had less than ideal outcomes, we ought to look at the pretreatment characteristics that led to worse outcomes. And as you can see here, it was the patients with prior NAR response that had the worst outcome and required the longer treatment duration in order to be successfully treated. Thus, to summarize the results with this regimen, you can see here that this 3D regimen is very effective at 12 weeks duration in patients who are treatment naive and treatment experienced who are non-cirrhotic, regardless of viral genotype, subtype 1A or 1B. Breakthrough is infrequent, and generally we see relapses. In patients with cirrhosis, the treatment is highly effective, but unfortunately for patients with genotype 1A, particularly those who are non-responders, 24 weeks of treatment is essential. 12 weeks is probably adequate for everybody else. The treating clinician needs to be aware of the fact that after registration of this product, there have been reports of decompensation of liver disease in patients with cirrhosis treated with this regimen, which warrants for careful attention to those who are going to be treated who have advanced disease. Anybody with decompensated liver disease at any time point should not be treated with this regimen. Let us now focus on the combination of daclatasvir and sofosbuvir. Daclatasvir is a potent pangenotypic NS5A complex blocker. Sofosbuvir, as we've said time and again, is a nucleotide polymerase inhibitor. Daclatasvir has been approved by the FDA to treat genotype 1 and genotype 3 infections. Ribavirin can be added for certain subgroups. The daclatasvir dose needs to be adjusted when used with CYP3A4 inhibitors or activators. It's important to keep in mind that patients with HIV infection who are treated with efavirenz or etravirine require a dose boost, and those that are receiving ritonavir-boosted atazanavir require a dose decrease. Careful attention to co-administered medications should be a matter of routine in treating patients with daclatasvir. To review daclatasvir-sofosbuvir regimens, we will cover two important trials. The first one is the so-called ALLY-1 study, in which sofosbuvir and daclatasvir plus ribavirin was used in patients with cirrhosis or who were post-transplantation with hepatitis C infection. For the purposes of this conference, of course, we're looking at patients with advanced cirrhosis. All patients in this regimen received 12 weeks of dacladasvir at 60 milligrams per day and sofosbuvir at a dose of 400 milligrams daily plus ribavirin. A caveat in the study was that individuals who relapsed after 12 weeks of treatment were offered retreatment with the same regimen for 24 weeks. The key results of the ALLY-1 study are outlined here. For the purposes of our discussion today, obviously we're looking at patients with advanced cirrhosis in which results were SVR of 83% at 12 weeks. In patients with Child-Pugh A and B, which are the types of patients that we've been discussing so far, the response rate is in the range of 92 to 94%, despite the fact that the numbers were quite low. The ALLY-2 study, which specifically looked at patients who were mono-infected or co-infected with HIV using dacladasvir and sofosbuvir, also give us a great perspective into how this combination actually works. Before I go any further, the reason that I can actually safely use this study to highlight the importance of treating with this combination, I need to also mention that it has become apparent that no matter what regimen we use in the setting of HIV and hep C co-infection, there does not appear to be any difference in the actual results with the presence of HIV. Thus, results that we notice in HIV-infected populations can be extrapolated to non-HIV-infected patients as well. As you can see in this sketch in this slide, patients who are hepatitis C infected or hepatitis C HIV co-infected and treatment naive were treated for 8 weeks or 12 weeks. The combination of dacladasvir and sofosbuvir for 12 weeks gives a sustained virological response of 96.4% in patients with genotype 1 who are treatment naive, regardless of whether they are infected with HIV or not. We have now reached a point at which we are ready to discuss the specific regimens recommended for the different viral subtypes in 2016. Before we outline those regimens specifically, I want to ensure that it's understood that these regimens are all very effective, especially compared with the days of pegylated interferon and ribavirin. The considerations for giving the higher recommendation are usually related to the efficacy and safety of the regimen, but also to the ease of administration and duration of therapy. I want to be sure that it is stated from the very beginning that some of these regimens that may not be considered the highest recommendation regimen may still be very appropriate for certain patient populations and can still be considered as quite useful if it leads to the treatment of patients who may otherwise not be treated. Specific considerations should be situations in which insurance coverage does not permit one regimen to be used but allows another one to be used, in which case the efficacious and safe regimen that can be afforded by the patient should be considered. Let us begin with regimens for viral genotype 1A. If the patient is treatment inexperienced and non-cirrhotic, are as follows. One can consider elbasvir and grasopivir for 12 weeks, but it's particularly important that if the patients have RAV testing prior to treatment and there are any high-risk polymorphisms, as outlined in the slide, consideration should be given to treating the patient for a minimum of 16 weeks. Next, you should consider ledipasvir and sofosbuvir daily for 12 weeks. Additionally, paratapravir, ombitasvir, dasabuvir plus ribavirin for 12 weeks, or simeprevir, sofosbuvir daily for 12 weeks. The regimen of dacladasvir and sofosbuvir can be used for 12 weeks, but there's less data driving this regimen. Until that is become clear, this is most likely an alternate regimen in the United States. For those patients who have viral genotype 1A and are cirrhotic, the treatment considerations are as follows. Elbasvir and grasopivir daily for 12 weeks, but only in patients who do not have any RAV that may render them high risk as discussed in the prior slides. The other regimen available is ledipasvir and sofosbuvir daily for 12 weeks. In those patients who have cirrhosis, if there's a need for an alternative regimen, one can consider elbasvir, grasopivir, and ribavirin for 16 weeks, paratapravir, ombitasvir, dasabuvir, and ribavirin for 24 weeks, simeprevir, sofosbuvir for 24 weeks. Again, it may be worthwhile to check for the Q80K polymorphism to ensure that you are not treating a patient that is likely to have a difficult time clearing the virus. And dacladasvir and sofosbuvir daily for 24 weeks, again, with a lot less data driving this recommendation. Let us now focus on regimens for genotype 1b. For those patients who are treatment inexperienced and are non-cirrhotic, there are the following recommendations. Elbasvir and garsoprevir daily for 12 weeks, ledipasvir and sofosbuvir daily for 12 weeks, the so-called 3D regimen of paratatrevir, ritonavir, umbitasvir, and dasabivir for 12 weeks. In this viral genotype, no ribavirin is recommended. Sofosbuvir and cimiprevir combined for 12 weeks without ribavirin, and daclatasvir and sofosbuvir for 12 weeks, again, with a lot less data driving this regimen. In genotype 1b cirrhotic patients, one can use elbasvir, garsoprevir for 12 weeks, ledipasvir and sofosbuvir daily for 12 weeks, and paratatrevir, umbitasvir, dasabivir for 12 weeks without ribavirin. As alternatives, one can use cimeprevir and sofosbuvir daily for 24 weeks. Remember, this requires a longer duration and ribavirin is optional and in some circumstances recommended. Or daclatasvir and sofosbuvir daily for 24 weeks. This is, again, longer duration and ribavirin is optional. I want to emphasize that recommendations for these regimens change quickly as data becomes available. And for that reason, I want to point the audience to the HCV guidelines website for a very dynamic and rapidly changing recommendation lineup that will provide the attendee with any changes that may have occurred from the time that this was recorded to the time that the patients need to be treated. In summary, I want to leave the audience with the following recommendations. HCV genotype 1 is the most common viral type in the United States. Hepatitis C is a curable disease. As you have seen, there are at least 5 regimens to treat those who have not been treated before. Access to treatment remains a significant challenge, and thus the clinician needs to understand the data that drives decisions to treat patients in order to challenge any denials of treatment. Knowledge of the regimens and expected results facilitates high rates of response to treatment in the range of 95% and above. Unfortunately, in the future, resistance-associated variants may drive treatment decisions, so one needs to be paying attention to the appearance of these mutations as patients are considered. Thank you very much for your attendance.